I'm State Representative Marcus Riccelli from the 3rd Legislative District in Spokane. I first was elected in 2012. I serve in our House Democrats majority as majority whip and part of our leadership team. And I'm a Spokane kid, born and raised, went to Mead High School, Gonzaga University, and did graduate school at the University of Washington.
So what does a majority whip do?
Yeah, so a majority whip, a lot of that is just helping the votes that get to the floor, get eligible for a floor vote, get actually passed, that align with our values as a state, and make sure that a lot of bills are introduced, but only a small number of them actually get out of the House chamber. And so my goal is to work with our caucus particularly and make sure we have the votes to be successful.
So, Marcus, you've got a very active life, family, job, that sort of thing. Why do you want to run for the legislature for 2 more years?
Yeah, well, I think these are very difficult times, and I just want our community to know that our community's health and safety are my top priority. I serve on the healthcare committee. I understand and I believe that our community and state are resilient, but we're going to need strong representation to help Spokane move forward. I think I bring that strong representation. Fighting for Spokane families is in my DNA. I demand support for workers and small businesses during this time to help with their recovery efforts. I've been working on local efforts to end hunger during the pandemic, and I'm committed to sticking up for Spokane, making sure we get our fair share and delivering for our hardworking neighbors.
So if you were looking at it from the outside, how would you handicap the 2021 session? What are the biggest issues from your point of view?
Well, first and foremost, it's healthcare and health and access. They're making sure people who are disproportionately affected are getting access during COVID times. Make sure that we're not going backwards, that we're going forward with expanding access and quality access to all people. That's one thing. I think our budget crisis is top of mind, getting people back to work, making sure we have an economy that works for everybody. I think one of the things that has been highlighted that I'm very passionate about is making sure that we address digital equity for education access and healthcare access. I think regardless of COVID, we need to make sure that, you know, we're the tech state, that we're lighting this state up in a way that everybody, for educational reasons, for healthcare reasons, and actually for job growth and job reasons, have access to broadband.
That has become kind of the big issue lately. I just wrote about it this week. How do you explain it to somebody who's not really familiar with it?
What I would say is it's, you know, just giving people access to internet is not good enough. If we're talking about particularly, I'll put my healthcare hat on, in this new age, allowing people to have access to telehealth, making people sure that people in Republic can get the same quality education that kids in Seattle get is important. And making sure that it's not a rural versus urban type discussion, because while we have lots of struggles in our rural areas, we know right in some of our poorest urban areas that people aren't connected in a way that they need to be successful in both for their jobs, but also for educational endeavors and for healthcare access.
So I think rural legislators have been talking about this for years. Why is it now just catching on?
Well, I actually been talking about it for years. And I think the problem is it's catching on because COVID pushed us to this point where we have to do things a little bit differently. But quite frankly, I have always looked at it largely. I serve on our state's telehealth committee from a healthcare access standpoint. I help support movements to join the medical licensure compact so we can provide. I actually sponsored that bill so we can provide more access to primary care. I've been working to make sure, and I sponsored a bill that was passed, the Senate version was passed, to make sure that we had payment parity for folks getting telehealth services. And I'll be introducing legislation to further that. Actually, we left off phone, and people don't think of phone as telehealth, but in some of our rural areas, phone is a great way for people to get access to healthcare as well. We did not include that in the payment parity bill.
I know the head of the state's broadband office says, you know, one of our challenges is to help rural communities get more competitive at trying to get some of those federal grants, and there are now federal broadband grants, he says. So is that a good approach? Should the state throw more money at it? Is it more the state's role than private sector? How do you view it?
It's a public-private partnership, and I'm really excited at how we look at this differently. Right now, I'm part of a group looking at how we can make additional investments in transportation. And part of that listening tour, I found out in Utah, where in state roads are being put in, they are laying conduit right next door as part of a dig once policy that can be done very cheaply and help light up communities. In fact, in some other places, they lay the conduit and then they work with, say, the Xfinities of the world, and they actually sell that back to them and make money off of it. So I just think we have to look at this completely differently. I think there's going to be a lot of discussion around the role of public utilities. Should they have access to actually go on and compete to retail access to internet in some of these rural areas? We have very interesting company right here in town, NoahNet, that does a lot of this work. And should they be able to go right onto the market and, sell retail that access? I don't know. I think it's worth a good discussion, but we have to look at this comprehensively. And I, again, don't want to put it into a rural urban narrative, because we have a lot of people right here in the third district of Spokane that don't have access right now, or they do have access, but it's not at the speeds that's required to have successful educational outcomes, have successful visits with their healthcare provider.
So let's sort of stay with the coronavirus. It's brought more attention to the role and funding of public health and finding a stable funding source for public health. How do you view this?
Well, I think public health is our first line of defense. I've said this, and I just said it last week at the State of Reform Health Conference, that this isn't a blame on Republicans or Democrats. This is a mirror to our all elected officials that we have systematically underfunded public health. And we need to invest. And we have seen through this COVID crisis that public health is our first line of defense, and we are woefully inadequate. So we need to make some serious gains in investing. I was proud we came out of the session even really understanding fully what we were headed into, putting $200 million into corona relief and addressing testing, et cetera. But we need to make a much more long-term robust investment in public health. And I hope that's one thing. Looking in the rearview mirror, COVID at some point, but just being in the midst of it right now, that we'll embrace fully and correct.
So as you head into a difficult budget situation going into 2021, where do you find the money for a public health, let's say a dedicated fund or something along that line?
I think it's interesting. Well, one of the things is there's a bunch of proposals we're looking at, both progressive and regressive revenue opportunities. For me, I've actually put something forward that I think makes a lot of sense. I introduced a bill towards the end of session that would be a tax on claims paid for insurance companies. You know, some of our insurance companies are sitting on lots of profits, on excess reserves, on huge surpluses. And I think that they should pay their fair share. And if we're able to enact something like that, we could make sure that money goes to public health. And I would also put that money towards potentially state subsidies for people who are on the exchange for healthcare access. One of the things, premiums are high on the exchange. And we know I sat through healthcare committees hearing about, you know, over 70,000 plus people that are on exchange had a deductible of $9,000 or more. So that's not affordable. We need to do better.
So there's a lot of angst right now about the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, potentially overturning the Affordable Care Act. How is the state, if that happens, how is the state set up to handle what is sure to be a big rush of people who need insurance all of a sudden?
Right. Well, we have been through the healthcare committee passing legislation to try and basically bake in protections for the Affordable Care Act if it should somehow something should come that should alter our direction. I was very pleased to hear our Republicans like Representative Joe Schmidt from the 9th District talk about how he thinks Medicaid should be our last resort. And so I think first and foremost, protecting our most vulnerable and the expansions in Medicaid that have occurred through Apple Health, through the Affordable Care Act, should be our top priority, and making sure we're not going backwards. Also, I've been very interested and involved in helping with oral health access and helped pass an initiative that increased access for 48,000 new low-income patients. During our last recession, we cut adult dental, and that could have serious impacts on overall health, could have serious impacts on our hospital systems, et cetera. So these are the places where I think we need to really buckle down and protect and say we're not going to go backwards.
Do you believe the private insurance system works for health insurance in the United States, or is it better off being a government-run proposition?
Well, I think we need to look towards efficiencies in all means, and I think that I've supported the public option. I'm on record as supporting single payer. I think the costs associated, we have to understand these difficult times, but I think we need to move towards getting more people access to affordable quality healthcare, and I support that. And I think what we're seeing with Medicaid expansions, with the Affordable Care Act, with so many people coming in, getting behavioral health treatment, getting treatment for things that they used to maybe wait to go to the emergency room, and those costs were astronomical, that we are doing a much better job. When I hear about great things like Spokane being one of the first VAs that's going to be going on with these integrated health records, these are the things that government can help with to make sure we're being efficient and streamlined and we're getting people the best care. And so I'm supportive of measures to reduce costs, provide greater quality health care, and obviously create more access.
All right. So a minute ago, you talked about insurance premiums, and I want to then switch to wildfires. And Hillary Frans, the state's lands commissioner, has proposed a tax or a surcharge on certain liability insurance premiums in order to pay for a dedicated wildfire fund. That kind of died in the last session, but I think a couple of weeks of wildfires and smoke in the Spokane area sort of brought people's ideas, voices back to wildfire. How do you view her proposal?
Well, first, let me say that I think most of us in Eastern Washington, unfortunately, have embraced the idea of five seasons, which now include fire season. So I think people get this. Let's go just back for a second and try and hope that we can all recognize the existential threat that climate change is having and how it impacts these fires and how we can't come together as a legislature to have broad support to reduce carbon. To make sure that we're addressing climate change, I think is something that we need to keep first and foremost on our minds. Now, do we need to make sure that we have resources to address fire season? Yes. Do we also, when I worked for Senator Cantwell and we were working with Congresswoman McMorris Rogers' office, we were working with cattlemen, we were working with timber companies, et cetera, about how we can do some more going into these areas and doing smart logging and things like that to make sure that we're reducing the fuel. I think that that's all good things that we should be coming together on. But yeah, it does take investment. And I would just say, like, as we match some of that investment that we're looking to do, we should also match that with the philosophical understanding that climate change is an existential threat to all of us and to our children, our grandchildren, our neighbors, and the lack of recognition through policies that are, I think, common sense. The way that this administration up top has pulled us out of treaties and other efforts to reduce our impact on making the world better is just really disappointing. So I think Washington should stand up to be a leader on those types of policy issues.
So keeping that in mind, the work that's being done to clear out on state land, on federal land, is just barely getting the need there. This could become a pretty expensive proposition if you want to continue to have avoid worsening wildfire seasons. Do you think the state understands what the magnitude is?
Well, I give credit to our lands commissioner. I think she does, and she's on a working with local communities to really, raise that issue. And I would hope bring legislators from both sides of the aisle to come forward with some proposals to how we actually fund this. And I'm looking forward to that continued discussion and debate. But I would hope that it's not just those folks saying we need this help, but also talking about what we get sent to do there, how we actually fund it.
So let me hit you with one other rural issue. You're in an urban district, and you're not yet. But I want to ask you your opinion about how the state has handled wolf interactions with livestock in northeastern Washington, killing wolves that have formed packs in Washington State. Has that been the right approach?
I think we need a balanced approach. I think anytime we get folks who are conservationists out with our cattle ranchers, et cetera, and we come up with ways that we can make the most sense for the areas. It's a highly polarized issue. I'm focused on issues that are really in my urban area, but I certainly listen to our rural legislators, and then with my experience working for Senator Cantwell covering Northeast Washington, it was something that I was very familiar with. And I know, you know, depredation of animals is a real attack on people's livelihood, et cetera. But I also know that, you know, we have this ecosystem that relies on that we don't want to see, you know, go away. And I think the threats to species is something as we look at how we preserve our way of life and how we want to continue on that we should be very cognizant of.
Let's turn to police reform then, and the governor's created a commission to examine certain reform ideas. Where does that work need to be done? Is it better done at the state level? Is it better done at the local level or a mix? Where do you start that conversation?
Well, look, I think it's extremely important that we, you know, I've worked for and voted for meaningful police reforms under I-940. I'm proud to continue productive dialogues within my caucus and with our community to seek additional changes that will improve trust and break down historic bias. I think it's truly critical right now that we address racial inequality and economic justice. We got to demand accountability and reimagine what is truly possible when we overhaul these structures rooted in and perpetuated by racial inequality. And it's going to take a lot of state leadership, but it's also going to take local leadership. And I hope it's working with communities that are most disproportionately impacted to talk about and with our police about how we reimagine how we do this better. And then we put it into practice.
So you as a legislator may be asked to do to vote on things like restricting chokeholds or bans on tear gas or other ways of making the police more accountable and more a transparent system. Are those all things that you think are appropriate then at the state level, or would you bring them back locally?
I think it's a combination. I think there's actions that need to be taken. And if we can do it from a statewide standpoint, I'm really looking to some of our leaders in our Members of Color Caucus and who are taking the lead on this issue, to our Public Safety Committee. They're doing a lot of work with communities to come back with some proposals that I can then take to the community here locally and the people I represent and, you know, get some feedback. But yeah, I definitely think there's some very common sense reforms like banning chokehold, et cetera.
Okay, so the last question I've been asking folks is, you're asking for people's votes, but when you're the voter, what are the sorts of things that you evaluate candidates like yourself?
Well, first and foremost, are they accessible? Are they transparent? Are they willing to talk about issues? Are they willing to come at it from a community angle versus a strictly partisan angle? Or some sort of dogma that's tied to their political leanings. I think it's really important that, you know, people are community first, and I think that's what I've done, and I have a record of doing from, you know, working in a bipartisan manner to create the WSU Medical School, support its expansion, working with our Gold Star families, working on dental access and. Et cetera, a lot of those things, looking at how we are expanding our county commissioner after all these commission after all these years is something that was very bipartisan that I led. Are they focusing on community first and making sure that we're getting our fair share and that we're addressing the issues that matter here? And that's one of the things that I look at. And I think particularly if they're active and engaged in the community, is a very basic threshold to get above. So
those were my basic issues. Anything that you wanted to talk about that I haven't asked about?
Yeah, I would just say that I'm ready to return to Olympia and continue my track record of delivering for our community. I think we need to focus on growing our economy from the middle out after this COVID crisis. And I've always said that we need to ensure that every child has an equal opportunity to thrive, regardless of the zip code they were born in. And I think this is a job interview, and I think I deserve to be rehired looking at what I've been able to deliver and how I work and basically how I stand up for Spokane and make sure that we are thriving and get our fair share.